Here we go. Epstein.
That's him, that's Andre.
Come on, turn around.
Welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast. I am your host, Sherry and Sade, and today we will be talking about the Netflix movie Scoop. Now, this movie just came out this past weekend. It's inspired by real events. This fictional dramatization gives an insider account of how the women of Newsnight secured Prince Andrew's infamous interview. This is not nearly the first time that I've talked about the Newsnight interview with Prince Andrew. You know, the one where he says he couldn't sweat, amongst many other flubs. We did talk about Banished, the Peacock documentary into Prince Andrew's life, but more importantly, an insight into his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, as well as the allegations against him. And they really broke down in that documentary the legal matters surrounding Prince Andrew, and they broke it down in terms that most people can understand, because I am not a legalese. And so I really appreciated how Banished broke things down, and I've already recapped that. Feel free to check out my Patreon. But Scoop is about the ladies of Newsnight and how they secured the interview. It is a really good movie. I'll start off by saying that it's a really good movie. I want to talk about the movie. I watched it today, so it is still very fresh on my mind. I want to talk about that. But I want to talk about the behind Scoop, the movie. And I found this really great article from NPR that kind of talks about it from a viewer standpoint, but also how it came to be. And then I found an article that breaks down the fact versus the fiction in the movie depiction on Scoop. And it's out now on Netflix if you want to check it out, versus what happened in real life. And you might be surprised after all of this. Again, this is reigniting Prince Andrew's allegations of sex trafficking and sexual assault on Virginia Guffrey and allegedly other women during his time as friends with Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. And it brings all that back to light. So people are now talking about that again. And it seems like every time he thinks it's gone away, it not only hasn't gone away, but it reignites people's frustration that justice was not fully served. He is still walking the streets. He is still living in luxury, in the lap of luxury. And the only thing that he really suffered, which was having his titles stripped from him and he's no longer working royal, is actually more so a benefit to him, because now he doesn't have to put up the facade of pretending to work for his luxuries. Now he can literally just live in the lap of luxury and not have to lift a finger. It doesn't seem like he actually suffered. But anyway, and also, yeah, they did pay out a settlement, but allegedly that wasn't even his money. So anyway, we are going to talk about Scoop today. I hope you are ready. Even if you haven't seen it, feel free to listen here and then check out the movie, or feel free to pause me, go watch the movie on Netflix, and then come on back. But let's get started. Once again, welcome back to my podcast. I am your host, Sherrianne Shade, and today we are going to be talking about Scoop. There will be spoilers, but if you know of Scoop, I mean, if you know of the Prince Andrew allegations, as well as everything that came after that interview, then I'm not really going to be spoiling anything for you because we all watched this happen in real time. And if you're not old enough to have watched it happen in real time, baby, you are not old enough for this here podcast. So before I get into my rating of the movie and my thoughts and my recap of the movie, I actually want to start with the NPR article written by Mary Louise Kelly, Courtney Dorning, and Karen Zamora. And the title is, quote, "A Masterclass in How to Give Terrible Answers Inside That Prince Andrew Interview." Oh, I love this. A masterclass in how to give terrible answers. Could anything be more accurate? So for those of you on Patreon, you can actually watch along. And for those of you on who are just listening to the podcast, wonderful. I'm going to read it for you. But I wanted to read this because, first of all, I love the way they broke it down. I thought it was great. And then secondly, I really appreciated how they gave insight into some of these things that if you weren't already in the know of all the allegations and everything that came along with this interview, if you weren't already in the know, you may have missed it during the movie. So I appreciate the way NPR handled writing about this movie. Again, this is on NPR.com. And as always, the link to the source is in the description box below. Now, first of all, right out the gate, you can already tell that NPR is about to handle some hard truths because look at the photo they chose for Andrew. Also, all of the actors looked identical to the real life people, and that threw me for a loop. Their makeup and hair department and the prosthetics and all of that, they need to win some serious awards. Because when Jeffrey Epstein walked his ass out of that building, out of his house or his townhome, I actually thought they used real footage. It took me by surprise how much he looked like the real Jeffrey Epstein. And then to see the Prince Andrew, oh my goodness, that was shocking. Everybody looked identical. It was insane. But anyway, quote, "The big get. In media lingo, that means the interview with the person at the center of a big story. Think Monica Lewinsky after her affair with then President Clinton, or the actor Alec Baldwin after the cinematographer was shot and killed on set of his movie, or Britain's Prince Andrew after his friend Jeffrey Epstein was arrested on sex trafficking charges. Interviews like these can entail months of negotiations, calls, emails, and meetings to persuade that person to go on the record. That is what happened in 2019 when BBC journalist Emily Maitlis sat down with Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, at Buckingham Palace. Then BBC Newsnight booker Sam McAllister had spent almost a year talking to Prince Andrew's private secretary and the prince himself. The result was an infamous interview in which Prince Andrew described Epstein's actions as unbecoming, said the financier's home was a convenient place to stay during a trip to New York, and said he had a condition that meant he couldn't sweat. Sorry. The booking and the interview have now been dramatized in the new Netflix film Scoop, released this month. McAllister spoke with All Things Considered host Mary Louise Kelly about how she got the interview and how she kept a poker face as the interview played out before her eyes. Pause that part of the movie when the interview is over and Prince Andrew is completely aloof and just happy somebody asked him a damn question and he got to answer, because he's often shuffled off to the side, but he loves the attention. And he had no idea how big his gaffes actually were. And to be fair, neither did his team. And you can see everyone from Newsnight, from the producer to the cameraman to the PA to the ladies themselves, how they were all just kind of trying to stifle the joy of having caught him in his own web. And he's just like, okay, cheerio. And the way that he just has no idea how much he really screwed up, it's so well portrayed. But everyone did such a great job in this movie. Everyone. Okay, so let's continue. Interview highlights. Mary Louise Kelly says, so your task was not only landing the interview, talking the palace and the prince into doing this, but talking them into doing a serious news interview where they would not be able to vet or control the questions in any way. Walk us through the argument that persuaded them. What did you say? Sam McAllister replied with, well, there's a double argument, right? Here is a man who used to be effectively a national hero in the United Kingdom. He was the beloved son of the queen, her favorite son by all accounts, a war hero. Pause. I just find that to be so cringy that she outwardly had a favorite child. I know that that's like a thing with some parents. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that some people bond with different children for different reasons and they have different types of enjoyment with each child. And yes, even some kids might be easier because they're more like yourself, et cetera. But just to just outright have a favorite kid is just, it will never not be weird and cringy to me. I hope that doesn't offend anyone, but if it does, I don't care. That's weird. I feel bad for the other kids who have to deal with that. And now he was effectively a problem prince at best. And then on the more pretentious level, of course, there was a view of Prince Andrew about him and his behaviors and the allegations against him, which of course he strenuously denies. But it was a double opportunity, a human opportunity to return to the life he had, and a royal opportunity to basically restore his reputation in some ways. So I feel it was those two things that made this really a dream opportunity, at least on paper for him. He always looks like a little bunny rabbit. Wow. Look at that. He just does not look. I don't know what my mind thinks of when I say royal. I guess royal to me means Queen Elizabeth. When I say aesthetically, like what royal should look like that elegance, that regal vibe, Queen Elizabeth, of course, Prince Harry, Princess Meghan, on a good day, Princess Eugenie, maybe Zara Tyndall. They just kind of have the look, but the rest of them, no. Even Princess Anne as well, she always just looks so resolute and strong and proud, but not in a pretentious way. But everybody else just kind of looks like, which way did he go? Which way did he go? It doesn't look regal. Sorry. And then, of course, I say that as a Princess Beatrice is in frame and looks completely like her dad. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, I guess. Quote, Kelly was there, or Kelly says, was there a moment in the negotiations where you could tell I got him? Like, that just landed. He's going to do it. McAllister replies with, there was a moment where I thought we might have him. The last negotiation is face-to-face with Prince Andrew and a surprise guest, his daughter, Princess Beatrice, in Buckingham Palace. I mean, you can imagine how overwhelming that was. It was about 2 hours long. I felt we had a rapport. Emily, the presenter, was also there, and Stuart McLean, who was the deputy editor. And at that moment of rapport, there's a moment of peril and there's a moment of chance. And I said something quite bold. I told him the truth, which was always my style, that he was known as Randy Andy. And that moment is really where he's either going to laugh and he knows that we might have integrity and trust we're honest with him, or he's going to slam the door in our face. Yeah, she's right about that. That was a shot in the dark. She really took a bold move there. She's right about that. Now, luckily, it was the former, but you never, ever know if someone's going to say yes until you get that final call. Kelly says, so you get the yes. The interview is taking place. The prince's answers are sounding increasingly tone deaf. Let me put it that way. Take me to that room. Where are you and what is going through your mind? McAllister says, oh my gosh. So I'm about 15 feet behind him. And I used to be a criminal lawyer, and I used to represent people accused of all kinds of things. And one of the great skills of that world is poker face. And thank goodness for poker face, 15 feet behind those incredible answers, trying not to show any emotion, trying not to communicate any panic or fear or consternation. And all I can see is the back of his head. So that must be why they used the cover that they used, which is already iconic. As soon as I saw the cover, I said, wow. This is an excellent cover. It's beautiful. I'll show it to you. So I saw the front of him for the first time when it went out a couple of days later, but it really was a masterclass in how to give terrible answers. And from my tiny perspective, a small personal masterclass in showing no emotion whatsoever on your face for an hour. One of the longest hours in television history, I would say. Okay, y'all on Patreon, does he not look identical to Andrew? Except he looks, I mean, I'm going to be honest, he looks a little better. This is Rufus Sewell, but he's also in prosthetics. But Rufus really made Andrew look nice. This is like if Andrew had work done. And I'm saying that in the nicest way possible. Y'all going to get to where y'all don't believe me when I say things in the nicest way possible. Y'all don't think I'm telling the truth when I say that. I kind of am. But Rufus Sewell made Andrew, it looks like Andrew if Andrew had a facelift. And again, I mean that in the nicest way possible. Kelly says, I mean, was there a moment where you're thinking, oh my God, this is just going completely off the rails? McAllister says, I think it was almost every moment. It was like building. And after the first answer, which was his mildest answer, every line was a news line. Just watching them kind of pile on top of one another over and over, it was really journalistically, obviously, the highlight of my career and quite an extraordinary experience. Kelly says, well, the fallout, the consequences from this interview were almost immediate. Just a few days afterward, Prince Andrew stepped back from royal duties. Did you have a sense, even as the interview was unfolding, like this is going to have just extraordinary consequences? McAllister answers and says, I knew it was huge. I'm not going to lie. I knew how consequential it was in theory, but the idea that it would topple a member of the royal family effectively, you know, sacked by his own mother, and we'd still be talking about it, let alone that I would have the opportunity of this incredible movie, it would have sounded like I was drunk if I said that to you. So I knew it was a scoop, but I just did not know it was the scoop of scoops. That's a great way to put that. So like I said, the movie is good and it's a very good watch. Their attention to detail is insane, all the way down to the teacups. They're so detailed and meticulous about everything that you see and hear and feel with the way that they presented this movie. Now, I'll say, because I have several platforms where royal things, all things royal, I should say, I cover them and I spend an inordinate amount of time combing over these details, more so than the regular viewer who's just kind of listening or interested, but not making it essentially their hobby. I can say, as someone who combs over these very royal things, they hit the nail on the head and they hit the ball out of the park. They did a wonderful job. Before we get into, again, my recap, I want to share this other article from Hello Magazine. It was written by Emmy Griffiths, and she goes through the scoop fact versus fiction, including Prince Andrew's teddies, the Queen's hair comb, and more. How much truth is in the film? And again, this is actually a better look at Rufus Sewell. Does he not look identical to, I'm not even sharing the tab. Here we go. Does he not look like identical to Prince Andrew, especially in this profile shot back here? Wow. They did an excellent job. All right, here we go. So let's get right into it. We don't have to get into the intro. Jay Donnelly snapped the photos of Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew in Central Park. This is actually true. The movie opened with photojournalist Jay Donnelly, played by Connor Swindles, going to some lengths and getting very out of breath to take the now infamous shots of Prince Andrew taking a walk in Central Park with Jeffrey Epstein. Jay, who is still a photojournalist, did indeed take the snaps, which confirmed once and for all that the pair knew one another and that Andrew had seen the convicted sex offender after he had spent 13 months in prison on child sex charges. Let's just go through the true parts. Okay, here we go. Andrew's people reached out to Newsnight first. This is actually true. Andrew's team did initially reach out to Newsnight about a potential interview. However, they were hoping that they would strictly discuss questions about pitch at Palace, and the BBC show turned them down, telling them that they would need to be able to ask questions about Andrew's relationship with Epstein. As Sam McAllister wrote in a piece for Radio Times, quote, it started innocently enough with an email in my inbox from a PR inviting us to do a puff piece. We declined that offer. We don't do those at Newsnight. And then a few months later came an invitation to the Palace to meet Amanda. But there was a red line. No questions about Jeffrey Epstein. And so even though at that stage it wasn't the huge story that it became, we declined again. No interview. It wasn't until Epstein was arrested that Andrew's team finally relented in allowing the interview to go ahead. Here's one that's unverified. The Palace budgets extra for teaspoons. They did say this in the movie. This is unverified at this moment. In a comment to Sam in the movie, Amanda jokes that the palace has an extra budget for teaspoons as guests tend to steal them as a memento that they had been there. She says, they just seem to go. It's seen as a good thing. It means everybody wants a part of us. The day we don't need to budget for extra teaspoons, .. Although this sounds perfectly plausible, there isn't any official word on the teaspoon budget situation at the palace. Be warned, though, if you ever step foot in the building, chances are the staff know what you're planning to take home with you. This actually came in the movie. Sam is waiting at the palace and she sees a tea set nearby. And she's just kind of looking through everything. And she picks up a teaspoon and takes a closer look. And it does look like she's going to steal it. And just as she's saying this, Amanda walks in and is like, hi. And she turns around. And they greet each other and they're about to walk into the room, into her office to have a conversation. And then Sam puts the teaspoon back. So I couldn't tell if that was just a joke from Amanda in the movie to let her know, like, hey, I saw that you were about to steal a freaking teaspoon. Or if that was actually something they wanted to leave in. But that would be funny. The next one is Prince Andrew has a vast teddy bear collection. Y'all, we have talked about that a lot. This is actually true. This is true. In the film, Andrew loses his patience with a member of the house staff, incidentally played by Kate Winslet's daughter, Mia Threpleton, over how she had arranged the teddy bears on his bed. If former testimonies are anything to go by, this is completely true. Former Royal Protection Officer Paul Page worked at Buckingham Palace from 1998 to 2004 and spoke about his love of teddy bears in the ITV documentary Ghislaine, Prince Andrew, and the Pedophile back in 2022. He said, quote, there was a card in a drawer and it was a picture of these bears all in situ. I'm not sure what that is, so I'm going to look that up in a minute. The reason for the laminated picture was if those bears weren't put back in the right order by the maids, he would shout and scream. Is that not terrifying for a number of reasons? I mean, think about what he's been accused of. He's been accused of sexual assault, taking part in trafficking, being friends with a number of very odd people, abusers, etc. And he also has an obsession with teddy bears. I think some research needs to be done, but let's continue. Now, I'm skipping the false ones because why? So let's go through the true ones. And the next one is Andrew's publicist quit over the planned interview. This one was true. PR guru Jason Stein did walk away from his role on Prince Andrew's team after advising him not to speak on Newsnight, but it wasn't quite as dramatic as the movie depicts. According to the Times, the decision to leave was by mutual consent. Maybe he should have been listening to him, but I'm glad he didn't. Princess Beatrice joined Andrew to meet the Newsnight team. True. In the movie, Andrew brings along his daughter, Princess Beatrice, who is seen making notes at their meeting with the Newsnight team. According to Sam, this is completely true. As she told the Tatler, a meeting at the palace on Monday, November 11th, with Andrew, Emily, the deputy editor, and a surprise guest, Princess Beatrice. A yes finally came on Tuesday. A date was set for Thursday. A panic of preparation ensued. Emily also spoke about the awkward moment in the 2023 documentary, Andrew, the Problem Prince. She said, quote, Princess Beatrice's presence was really quite a curveball of curveballs. Can you imagine being in Buckingham Palace about to talk to a member of the royal family about sexual offenses? That's pretty tricky. And now I've got to do it in front of his daughter. To me, that's on him. He should feel terrible about having to talk about the allegations of sexual indecency at best and sexual assault at worst in front of his daughter. And I find it to be interesting that it's Princess Beatrice, you know, the one that's still very, very, very cozy with Piers Morgan. Let's continue. Andrew also knew Jimmy Savile. We've talked about this, but let's get back into it. This one actually is true. And it says to an extent, Prince Andrew had dealings with Jimmy Savile in the past, namely featuring on Jim'll Fix It in 1994 after hosting one of the contestants on the HMS Cottesmore. However, despite that, it appears that they had very few dealings and that the line, I don't know why everyone's so upset about my friendship with Epstein, I knew Jimmy Savile so much better, was written more as a joke and perhaps to convey Andrew's lack of understanding at the severity of the situation. That is true, but let me just say this. I don't like that the article skimmed over this. Jimmy Savile was actually very close friends with Prince Charles at the time that Charles was a prince. I have a whole video about that. Please go check it out. And I believe it was also covered in one of the episodes that we had on the podcast too, but Jimmy Savile had a 20 plus year friendship with Prince Charles. He was even known as an advisor when it comes to PR matters. He wrote a handbook. And then there were allegations. Let me be very clear. There were allegations that Jimmy Savile attempted to guide two choir boys down a hallway toward a bedroom at one of the royal residences while Prince Charles was there. And he was stopped by a courtier who was like, "What are you doing?" And he was like, "Oh, we're looking for," I think it was an organ or a piano or something. And he was like, "Oh, well, let me show you where those are," and sent the choir boys back to the rest of the choir. There's a lot to unpack there. Anyway, let's skip the false ones. Okay, here's the next one. Jeffrey Epstein went to Beatrice's 18th birthday party. It's almost like Eugenie doesn't exist. They haven't mentioned her once. And that might be on purpose. I'll get into that in a second. This was true. Yes, as mentioned in the show, Jeffrey Epstein did go to Beatrice's Victorian-themed 18th birthday party and was photographed alongside Ghislaine Maxwell and Harvey Weinstein. They certainly keep some interesting company. So it says the late queen trusted Andrew's judgment on the Newsnight interview, and it's unverified. But in the movie, it says that Prince Andrew consulted with the queen regarding whether or not he should continue with the Newsnight interview and allow them to ask questions about Epstein after Epstein had been arrested. In the movie, they say that the queen says, "I trust your judgment." But it's unverified whether or not that's true. And the only person that could actually say whether or not that's true is the queen or Andrew. The queen has passed on and Andrew isn't exactly a valid source for truth. And for the last moment, it is true. And it says Andrew thought the interview went well. He is so disassociated from reality. It is insane. He literally has no concept of real life. Like, he just seems like he is floating above things. He seems so disassociated to me. It says, Prince Andrew was reportedly delighted by the interview, as was his team at the time. In her book, Sam wrote, quote, "I could barely believe his people hadn't stopped the interview. I would have, despite the consequences. How did you think it went?" I asked the equerry. She beamed. "Wasn't he wonderful?" she said. I'd expected Amanda Thirsk to be distraught, the prince to look shaken or concerned, but she was smiling and he seemed ebullient. And then it hit me. He thought it had gone well. He was in such a good mood that he offered us all a tour of the palace. Again, like I said, Andrew just likes the attention. And so he was just happy somebody asked him something and he felt in control. And I think that's, in my opinion, he probably felt in control and he felt like he did a good job because it seems like they surround themselves with yes people. As you saw when Jason had said, Jason, I think it was Stein, had recommended he not do the Newsnight interview. He later quit and it was a mutual choice. He should be listening to people who have his best interest in mind, but he's more worried about teddy bears. Sometimes you can simply not save someone from themselves. And that's why those types of people work best with yes people, because at the end of the day, this did need to come out. So I'm glad for his aloofness because at least we got some kind of justice, or at least Virginia Guffrey got some form of justice. But in my opinion, true justice would have been following that payout. His ass should have been in jail. That's just my opinion. Now that enough time has passed, now we're aware that at the time, Prince Andrew thought that the interview went well. He even gave them a tour of the palace. And he thought things went well, as did his team, because they're all aloof. However, we now know that that didn't go well for him. It went well for everybody else. And again, I don't care about the violators and the perpetrators in situations like these. So by all accounts, it did go well. I'm glad that he tied himself up in a number of verbal binds, and I'm glad that what came out did come out. However, you would think after the fallout and realizing, oh, that didn't go as I thought it did, look at the fallout. Look at the consequences. You would think that he would then challenge his perception of the interview and learn something. Mm-mm. Y'all, he is still just as, in my opinion, insane now as he was then, because apparently he was delighted by the movie Scoop. So Scoop brings all of this back to light, which I mean, in my opinion, it highlights a very turbulent time for Prince Andrew. Obviously he suffered a number of, not suffer, he endured a number of just consequences, but it was a moment of pure pain and agony for his mother, who clearly was internally pushing back on all the stuff that she had to do to protect the crown. at every chance, she would allow Andrew to speak on her behalf. She would be seen photographed with him riding horses. Everything the queen did, as most royals, is intentional. They are not photographed with anyone without a message behind it. They don't even wear anything, jewelry, clothes, makeup, a hairstyle, without a purpose behind it. So the falling out of Andrew kind of snowballed into these moments here and there of the queen publicly supporting Andrew on purpose. And it was a clear message that although I did what I had to do for the crown, you cannot come between me and my son. And I'll say this, nobody's perfect, but she definitely rode with her son to the end, despite what he did to not only Virginia Guffrey, but allegedly other young ladies. Now, I say that to say, you would think that by now Prince Andrew would have realized what a gaffe it was, but apparently no. He's so excited about Scoop because it brings him more attention. He has no idea how to separate, in my opinion, from the outside looking in. It looks like he just doesn't know how to separate good attention from bad attention. It's kind of alarming, but okay. Now, Tom Sykes wrote an article for the Daily Beast that says, Prince Andrew is delighted by his portrayal in Netflix's Scoop, friends say. And I think that just has to do with Rufus Sewell, who made him look like, if Prince Andrew looked like anything other than a chipmunk, it would look like Rufus Sewell with the prosthetics. And I think Andrew just likes seeing himself look nice on camera. That's my opinion, but I don't know. It says, a friend of Andrew's tells the Daily Beast he feels Scoop is much more even-handed than he expected. It's fair to say he was delighted by Rufus Sewell's portrayal of him. Okay, let's go. It's the one positive review Netflix likely does not want. Prince Andrew's friend tells the Daily Beast he is delighted with his portrayal by Rufus Sewell in the streamer's latest buzzy drama, Scoop, which dramatizes the 2019 BBC Newsnight interview that crystallized Andrew's disgrace and precipitated his withdrawal from public life. Seems like we've been seeing him everywhere now. The interview conducted by anchor Emily Maitlis, played by Gillian Anderson, famously included Andrew's denial of sweating and of ever having met Virginia Roberts Guffrey, and his using a pizza night with his daughters as an alibi. Pause. I also want to go back there. And one of the allegations, it said that he was somewhere that he claims he wasn't because he had taken Princess Beatrice to a pizza parlor in another town. And that's a whole thing. But please excuse the tinfoil hat thing. This stuck out to me even at that time because there were these conspiracy rumors that floated that abusers or traffickers use the word pizza to identify underage girls. And they use a number of words to signal or to kind of like signal other traffickers that they're all in the know. But if you weren't in, you wouldn't understand what they meant by pizza. And if you haven't looked up, what's her name? John Legend's wife. I always forget her name. Anyway, she deleted like thousands of tweets that were pretty odd, that really did play into this conspiracy. I don't know what she meant by it, but when you read them in that context, it was alarming. And because then when you zoom out of that context and you say, okay, discard the conspiracy, what does she mean? And you read the tweets, it didn't make sense in any other context. And so she deleted all those tweets and she had a couple of weeks of hell on Twitter. But anyway, I have to think of her name. It's like Chrissy Teigen, that's her. So look that up if you can. It was quite alarming. But anyway, there's a conspiracy that traffickers use pizza as a term for underage girls. So that people, they don't just say, hey, you want some underage girls or whatever. They say, you know, you want to go get pizza and other traffickers will know what you mean. So I thought it was interesting that he's being accused of participating in sex trafficking underage girls. And he's like, oh, I have an alibi. I was getting pizza. And Banished, the Peacock documentary, really digs deep into that alibi and proves that it was false and makes it even more concerning why he used that term. And I personally think with all of this information in front of me that that was a signal to someone. Just my thought. I could be wrong. Guffrey alleged Andrew had sexually assaulted her three times when she was a minor and being trafficked by Andrew's former friend, Jeffrey Epstein, a claim Andrew has always denied. He later paid Guffrey a rumored $12 million or £12 million in an out-of-court settlement. A friend of Andrew's who has spoken to the prince since the one-off film was released told the Daily Beast, quote, obviously, Andrew regrets doing the interview, and if he had had his time again, he wouldn't do it. That said, he feels Scoop is much more even-handed than he expected. It's fair to say he was delighted by Rufus Sewell's portrayal of him. Told you. Another friend of the Duke's told the Daily Beast, I think the show, to the satisfaction of everyone who actually knows the guy, made clear that Andrew was an extremely good convener of people. He did actually play a valuable role for the royals with Pitch at Palace and his other business-focused advocacy work. When he was at a business meet and greet in a conference room in Hong Kong, there was real energy when he entered the room. Those things are otherwise as dull as ditch water. He flew the flag for British business. He knows he screwed up monumentally over Epstein, but nobody is now doing what he did then. He still has a lot to offer. Wow. So, I mean, listen to how these soulless cretins operate. Sure, he's great for business and good PR. Who cares that he could have been R-wording little girls? Oh, get over it. He's great for business and making meetings fun. So is a court jester. Get a court jester, hire a magician, but you should not be advocating for sex offenders. Alleged. The friend added, the irony, of course, is that Newsnight got gutted anyway. The nightly show was cut to 30 minutes and more than half of its 60 staff were fired. And Andrew is very much back in the fold. You're bragging about a sex offender, alleged sex offender being back in the fold. And one of the conduits to some partial truth ended up enduring some sort of failure. You're on the side of an alleged sex offender. How good can you feel? And you want to know what? They know they're wrong as hell. That's why they didn't go on the record with their name. They just want to be called a friend. Ugh. A friend of the king and queen said that Charles, who was battling cancer, we don't need to know that. Cancer ain't got nothing to do with this, was vanishingly unlikely to have watched the show and that he regarded the Andrew question as settled and that there was no way back to an official public role for Andrew, but that he would continue to be welcomed at non-state family occasions. Listen, the royal family ain't no different than some of these backwooded families who still allow the family predator to come to every event and they don't hold his ass accountable. They don't care how many of the family kids say, hey, this person made me uncomfortable. This person touched me weird. This person made me feel bad. They will advocate for the dirty, nasty, creepy uncle and just say, don't wear shorts around him. It's disgusting. That just goes to show no matter how much money or privilege you have, you cannot buy class and decency. They have zero moral standing, no value system, no nothing. Ugh, disgusting. Buckingham Palace did not respond to a request for comment on the drama, including whether the king had watched. I don't care if the king watched it or not. I'm glad I watched it. That's all. So anyway, that's not surprising that anybody who would befriend Andrew would be happy with I don't know. They're clearly happy with the outcome because they didn't completely eviscerate Andrew, but I think it's because they don't know what to look for because they don't know any better. We're dealing with people who seem to think being an abuser is much better as long as you can make meetings fun than being the exposer of truth, which is what Newsnight tried to do. So we're not dealing with people who are completely baked. We're dealing with a lot of half-baked people who just want to suck from the power teat. That's really all we've got. So we can't expect decency or morality from these quote unquote friends of, or even the king himself, because the fact that they wanted to mention cancer, despite cancer not even being diagnosed at the time that all this went down, is ridiculous. We don't need to know that the king has cancer to talk about Andrew's philandering ways. That's not really our concern. But anyway, I also wanted to talk about something that I found to be interesting. To properly segue into this next conversation topic, I'm going to be starting with an article from The Telegraph. Now, y'all know I don't really like The Telegraph, but whatever. If you didn't know, Princess Eugenie, daughter of Prince Andrew, she co-founded the Anti-Slavery Collective along with her best friend, Julia de Boinville. They have a podcast that also amplifies the message of the Anti-Slavery Collective. And for all accounts, they do a great job of bringing light and providing and helping to provide resources for exploited people around the world. Whether you are a victim of domestic servitude, trafficking, et cetera, they do a great job of explaining the types of ways people can be exploited in modern day slavery. And they taught me a lot. I'm not going to lie. The Floodlight podcast taught me so much. And a lot of people love that I recap that podcast. But when I realized that Princess Eugenie, up until the when I started recapping the podcast and really supporting the anti-slavery collective at that time, it wasn't really clear whether Princess Eugenie would still publicly support her dad. And I'm one of those people that gives everybody a fair shot. You cannot account for your family. I have some crazy ass family. I have real family who's crazy as hell. I have two uncles who shot each other. They were brothers, both mother and father the same. They shot each other. I have other family who's done some crazy stuff. I have family, some good family who's done amazing things. One of my dad's cousins, his first cousin, was Beyonce's band leader for forever. Her name is Bebe McGill. She was Beyonce's band leader forever, for a really long time. And then they split after a while. But she's like a really famous guitar player, and she's doing all these amazing things. And then I have family from back of the woods do some crazy stuff. So I'm one of those people that's like, I don't think your family defines you. You're going to have success stories in your family. You're going to have some crazy stories in your family. It's what you endorse and what you promote and what you uplift and what you consent to. What you support is what's really important. And I never wanted to hold Princess Eugenie to an unfair standard. So when I started to learn about Prince Andrew and all the things that he was accused of, and I started to learn more about Princess Eugenie and her work in the anti-exploitation field, I was really conflicted. And I decided to support until I had a reason not to. And the first time I questioned supporting Princess Eugenie was during one of their public family appearances where she showed up and walked with her dad. And I thought, if you are the co-founder of an anti-exploitation, anti-modern slavery organization, and you're one of the faces, one of the most recognizable faces in the world, and you choose to use your platform to amplify this issue, which is anti-trafficking, and you still choose to show up and support one of the biggest faces of sex trafficking in the world, allegedly, that is a choice and it's intentional, and it was a bad call. It was a bad call. I can't tell anybody how to handle their family, but I can absolutely decide what I support. So that was the first time he gave me a question. Then she did it again. And I just thought, who's advising her? This isn't a good look for her or what she represents. And it kind of cuts the meat and potatoes out of the foundation of what she's doing. If I were Julia de Boinville, I would be pissed. I would be absolutely pissed. Because it's the right thing to do, in my opinion, to step down. If you're not going to hold your dad accountable, I don't want to hear your thoughts on the issue, to be real, because it's all talk. You don't really care about trafficked victims because you still support your dad who's allegedly trafficked someone. And while he has not been found guilty in a court of law, he did pay out a settlement. And he is widely regarded as the face of trafficking for a lot of people worldwide. So why would we trust his daughter who still supports him? How can you publicly support an alleged trafficker if you have an organization meant to help exploited people? You can't have it both ways. And so that's when I had pause about Princess Eugenie. There are many of things that Princess Eugenie has done right, and I have amplified her in so many ways. I've talked about her, I've given her praise, and et cetera, et cetera. The way that she treats her cousins, the way that she does not pick sides and she does not mistreat Harry and Meghan, I love that, et cetera. Great. But that doesn't change the conflict in front of us. And so I was very disappointed by that. The third time I had questions about Princess Eugenie was when she appeared along with Princess Beatrice at the pub with Piers Morgan. Although she left without being photographed with him, she actually left alone. That was a bad look. In my opinion, that was a bad look. And then my final straw, where I said, I will never support any of her endeavors on my platforms. And it doesn't matter. She's way more famous. She has her own platform. She does not need raggedy old me supporting her, was when she took a private jet to Formula One in Bahrain with Jeremy Clarkson. Now, it wasn't just them, but being that all of them have access to so many luxuries, including private jets, that was a terrible call to make. If you know, you know. Flew there and back with him. So I get being surprised on the way there, like, oh shit, I didn't know Jeremy Clarkson was on this plane. Why did y'all have me here? And getting your own transpo back, but to come back with him and be photographed exiting the plane with him, those were all intentional choices. Nothing is done with the royals by mistake. And that was my final straw. Now people have shared, oh, Sharon, you're wrong. You still have to support Princess Eugenie. No, I don't. She's a hypocrite. She is a hypocrite. She's a hypocrite. And I don't support people like that. If you are going to venture into something as serious as trafficking, and you are an advocate for spreading the word and creating resources and helping people, then you need to stand on business even when the people you love challenge you. If you really believe in your message, you have to stand on business. Even if in private she is ripping her daddy to shreds, the choice to step out with him publicly is certainly a choice. Let me just say this. I'm not famous by any means. I have family who has been accused of terrible things by other family members. And while I can't say one way or the other, I will always support the victims. And so when that person who's been accused of perpetrating someone else shows up at an event, I get to my shit and I go. And I share with people, do not invite me if you invite him. He has been accused of molestation. Do not invite me anywhere if that person is going to be here. I do not want to share and commune with people like that. I take it very seriously where I fellowship, and I do not fellowship with rapists, period. So it's not impossible to choose not to support someone who's been accused of exploitation, especially when that's your field of work. That is insane to me that that even bears explanation. But anyway, back in 2019, The Telegraph actually talked about this conflict, and I think they do a great job of mapping it out and really sharing why it's such a big issue. But I'm going to get to a certain point that amplifies exactly why I think she's a hypocrite and she needs to come out one way or the other. Either step down from the anti-slavery collective and work behind the scenes, choose not to be the face of anti-exploitation efforts if you are still going to be the face of, I support my daddy no matter who he rapes. You can't do that. Although they are simply allegations, they have not been proven true in a fact of, in the court of law. He's still settled, and the optics are everything in a case like this. Anyway, the catastrophic fallout from the Duke of York's Newsnight interview is already affecting the endeavors of his younger daughter, who co-founded an anti-slavery charity. The Sunday Telegraph understands that the anti-slavery collective set up by Princess Eugenie with one of her closest friends, who is y'all named Julia de Boinville, don't do that, has become embroiled in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. It is believed the charity has had to scale back some of its activities until the crisis engulfing the Duke blows over. This is terrible. They scaled back some of the work that they do. Mind you, their work directly helps and amplifies and provides resources for exploited people, people who've been trafficked, people who've been put in modern day slavery. They provide resources and help and aid, and they spread the message of people who have been abused. They had to scale back on that because of the negative press from the Duke of York. Again, you have to make a choice with a situation like that. You have to come out strong and say, listen, I hate to say this, but if this were my dad, I would be like, listen, whatever he got up to is, I didn't know about it, but what I'm not going to do is risk not being able to help as many people as I need to help. So he needs to deal with that over there, but he will not be getting my support. My support and my concern is with victims. I would make it very clear, but that's just me. It says, as far back as August, Princess Eugenie was said to have been forced to postpone a podcast series about modern day slavery due to the difficulties surrounding her father. When it comes to things like that, and you cannot proceed in your, quote, valiant efforts, then you need to step down. That's just simple as that. Last week, when her charity published a photograph in the wake of revelations that the Duke had effectively been sacked, it attracted a stream of vicious comments. Good. People are sick of being played as fools. And it also is concerning. You have access to trafficked victims while your father, who you still publicly support, is known or is alleged to have trafficked victims. One might say that's a little too close for comfort. And are those victims who you have access to through your charity actually safe from your dad? That brings about a lot of questions, a lot of concerns. It's kind of why people are questioning what's his name? I always forget, Ashton Kutcher, how close he is to Diddy and how close he was to Danny Masterson. And he is the face of anti-trafficking movements here in the US, only to find out he wrote a letter of support for a vicious rapist that went on record along with his wife, but he's also the face of anti-trafficking. How can you be the face of anti-trafficking and safety for girls and then write a letter of support for a known convicted rapist, vicious rapist? And you're also friends with Diddy. And then the whole thing with whatever that website was that he and Diddy invested in, that a lot of parents came out to find out that people were sharing indecent visuals with their 13-year-old kids that Ashton Kutcher and Diddy were the face of. That website, Tiny Cube or something like that. See, when there's a level of closeness, it begins to concern me. Because we're not talking about a third cousin twice removed or whatever. We're not talking about like her great great uncle was accused of sexual assault. Your dad, who you still publicly support, is accused of rape several times and is connected on camera and on record with a known sex trafficker. And they were even at your sister's birthday party along with another convicted sexual offender. And you are, by all accounts, the face of an anti-sex trafficking and anti-modern day slavery and exploitation organization. And you still publicly support several people, your father, who still publicly supports several people, friends of his who were sexual deviants, allegedly. Can you not see how people are concerned about, okay, where did that overlap? Were victims really safe? Did Andrew have access to the people who were part of the program? It's concerning. And I can see why people have those questions. The photograph of Princess Eugenie with her mother, the Duchess of York, meeting Anuradha Kerala, so sorry if I'm not saying that correctly, an inspirational Nepalese activist, was intended to highlight work fighting human trafficking. But instead, it became a vehicle for social media users to attack the Duke's involvement with Jeffrey Epstein, a convicted sex offender accused of trafficking teenage girls around the world. One said, quote, "You really do not get it, do you?" before going on to question why Miss Kerala would want to be associated with someone who not only knew a man who ran a sex trafficking ring, but was married to someone accused of sleeping with an alleged victim who claimed she was trafficked. All questions that need to be asked. The Duke has vehemently denied ever having slept with the alleged victim or any involvement with Epstein's alleged trafficking activities. Another said it was ironic that the princess was pursuing this particular cause given her father's previous relationship or previous friendship with Epstein. It is. Like, again, if she were to openly denounce or choose to not be photographed with him, the conversation would be very, very different. It's her active choice to continue to support him while still, you know, heading up and being the face of an anti-trafficking organization. It's just simply too close for comfort. Those two lanes go in different directions and they are barely divided. That is a problem. A source close to the York family said that the deepening crisis engulfing the Duke, this has been terrible for the children. The Duchess of York is trying to keep it together for them and is making sure they are in a good place. They are very upset. Imagine what it would be like if this was your father. Imagine what it would be like if you were the victim. I don't really care how it affects everybody else. It's unfortunate that the kids are embroiled in this, and that's where I draw the line. I am concerned about the kids, but my concern goes first and foremost to the victim. That is when I don't care how it affects Eugenie, unfortunately, or Eugenie, my bad. I don't care how it affects them. I don't care how it affects Sarah. I don't care how it affects Beatrice. I care how it affects the kids. I care how it affects the victims. And that's it. And more people need to be wired in that way. Support the victims, because they didn't have a choice whether or not they could be involved. They were trafficked. And so that's why my concern goes there first and foremost. It's kind of a slap in the face to be like, but think about how she feels. This is her daddy. I care about the victim who didn't have a choice. That's who I care about, because Eugenie still has a choice whether or not she supports her daddy. Anyway, others point out that for Princess Beatrice, who is due to marry, this was back in 2019, this should have been one of the happiest and most exciting times of her life as she plans her dream wedding. However, they're worried about everybody else but the victims, and that is where they start to mess up. That is their problem. Anyway, this article goes on to just talk about the family and wow, woe is me. Their daddy had to be embarrassed. Well, there's a victim, several victims out there who will never get chunks of their life back mentally, nor physically or whatever. And they will forever be emotionally scarred by the things that her daddy allegedly participated in. So excuse me if I don't give a shit how Princess Eugenie or her other sister Beatrice feel, especially since they still cavort with Piers Morgan and Jeremy Clarkson. They can kill that noise. They're not too bothered because they're not separating themselves from known abusers. Now, when I say Piers Morgan and Jeffrey Clarkson, they were not engaged or associated with the sex trafficking, but they have been very abusive towards their own cousins, Harry and Meghan. And they still publicly support them. So at the end of the day, I don't really care how the York sisters feel, nor the York mother, nor the York husband. They can all go to hell, according to me, because they are clearly not loyal people. All of it seems so calculated over there. It's business as usual, despite the people you are doing business with are literally embroiled in a public attack against your own cousins. It's disgusting. I'm not having dinner. I'm not breaking bread. I'm not sharing a plane with anybody who's attacked my family. Absolutely not. But again, we're all built different. What matters to me might not matter to them. So I can't really judge them for that. But what I can say is I don't support them, nor do I respect them. And they don't need my musty respect. So I guess we're good on that. So now it's time for me to give my opinion on Scooped the movie. I felt Scooped was very well done. I thought it was very well done. I enjoyed it. It really did capture me from the very beginning. And I thought it was just a very well-told story. Now, again, like I said before, I spend an inordinate amount of time combing over royal things because it's part of what I base my platform on. It's kind of what we talk about. It's my hobby. So I knew who everybody was and their role and their relationship to each other, et cetera. I knew these stories already. But for someone who was not invested, even a fourth of the extent that I am, they likely would have gotten lost, especially since this is on Netflix and it's also being promoted to American audiences. I likely would have given a little bit more background as to who each person was. I would have found a way to write it into the script so that everyone was easily identifiable. And the magnitude of pulling this off would have really been felt by people across the pond as well. And so that's the only note I really have about it. I think everything else was very well done. I think the aesthetics were great, but the casting and the makeup and hair department, they outdid themselves. The acting was also phenomenal. This was almost word for word, inflection for inflection, sigh for sigh, look for look, a perfect rendition of the actual interview. It's kind of insane. Now, for those of you on my Patreon, I am actually posting the real interview today for you. And then tomorrow you will get the visual adaptation of this podcast episode, of course. But you're also going to get more content regarding the comparison between Scoop and Banished. So it's my recommendation, if you really want to feel the impact of Scoop, it is my recommendation to watch Banished, which is the Peacock documentary. Now, they obviously aren't promoted. I'm not promoting them in any way. I'm not paid to promote them. I just thought it was a really great depiction of Andrew's life, if you really weren't that invested in him before, Andrew's life, but also his entanglement with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. They break it down very well. They also talk about a number of other allegations outside of what he's alleged to have done to Virginia Guffrey, as well as with other masseuses and things that he's alleged to have done to them. And they actually have her on camera talking about her experience with him being indecent with her. They really go in depth in a way that will help you understand Scoop a lot better. It's just a much better, far more superior watch, in my opinion, but that's also because it's a documentary. It's not an adaptation. So it's more real, it's more authentic, and it's not cinematic in any way. Very well done. One of the best documentaries I've seen. I encourage you to watch that and then watch Scoop so that the magnitude of Scoop can be felt, because Scoop is an excellent movie. It's really well done, but it's only a small instance in a very big story. And so I feel like Banished gives you the very big story and it'll help prepare you to really take in Scoop. So that's just my recommendation. But I thought Scoop was done very well. One of Netflix's best movies, best films. I'm supposed to say Milms. One of Netflix's best films, especially regarding a true event. They did a great job. They outdid themselves. So I want to share a small clip of Banished for those of you who haven't seen it. And maybe that'll help you understand why I'm like kind of semi recommending you watch that first.
He wasn't rich enough. He wasn't the heir to the throne. Meanwhile, Epstein was very, very good at making him feel that, treating him as if he was a major big deal.
Jeffrey Epstein was awash with money and property all over the world. There are a lot of pretty girls around.
But the privacy that Epstein offered, the house in Manhattan, the private plane, the private islands, That for Andrew was heaven. I mean, he was able to behave as badly as he wanted behind closed doors.
This entire sorry saga boils down to sex and greed. Prince Andrew has never had a woman say no to him, as far as we know. But then we hear about Virginia Roberts Jaffray.
Unbelievable, self-destructive decision you could possibly make. I mean, Andrew strapped on a suicide vest and sat down with one of the most forensic interviewers. I was actually sweating on his behalf.
It was a Saturday night in November. I sat down on the sofa at my home in London and, I was just stunned.
I'm just trying to work this out. You were staying at the house of a convicted sex offender.
It was a convenient place to stay. I've gone through this in my mind so many times, and I admit fully that my judgment was probably coloured by my tendency to be too honourable, but that's just the way it is.
Because during that time...
I watched the Newsnight interview with growing disbelief, really.
Do you regret the whole friendship with Epstein?
Still not.
I mean, there was a point where I wanted to stuff my own fist in my mouth. And I was sort of like, no, oh my God, oh.
You threw a birthday party for Epstein's girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell.
No, it was a shooting weekend.
A shooting weekend.
Just a straightforward shooting weekend.
It was quite astonishing, the excuses he came up with.
Here's the problem. I've never seen Epstein with a camera in my life.
Andrew said the picture of him with Virginia was fake.
I mean, that's a picture of me. It's not a picture of... I don't believe it's a picture of me in London. Because when I go out in London, I wear a suit and a tie.
It was just, you know, great conspiracy theory.
The photograph is taken upstairs, and I don't think I ever went upstairs.
You're sure of that?
Yeah, because the dining room and everything was on the ground floor.
That interview utterly ripped to shreds every one of his excuses.
You have to understand that I
it essentially revealed him to the public as absolutely beyond the pale.
She described dancing with you and you profusely sweating and that she went on to have
there's a slight problem with the sweating because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, or I didn't sweat at the time, and that was... Oh, actually, yes. I didn't sweat at the time because I had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at.
And then, of course, newspapers found pictures of him wearing almost the same blue shirt, sweating at that time. And then, you know, there was the Pizza Express story.
On that particular day, I was at home. I was with the children. I'd taken Beatrice to a Pizza Express in Woking for a party.
Why would you remember that so specifically? Why would you remember a Pizza Express birthday and being at home?
Because going to Pizza Express in Woking is an unusual thing for me to do.
Woking is a strange little town not far from Windsor. And the idea of Prince Andrew picking his daughter up from a Pizza Express in Woking became a joke.
He can't remember meeting a woman and having a photo with her, but he can remember a pizza he had 18 years ago.
So that's just a clip of Prince Andrew Banished. It's a Peacock original documentary. I have a recap of it over on my Patreon if you want to check it out. But it gives you a lot of insight and it will help prepare you to watch Scoop and fully take in the moment. So that's just my recommendation. I'm sorry, that interview is so bad. I don't know that I've ever seen a bigger train wreck in my life, but I'm not surprised. It was a train conducted by Randy Andy. So anyway, that is all I have for you today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. The Patreon video accompanying this episode will come out tomorrow, along with a little bit more content, because I have a lot more that I want to get into that's more so visual. And so it doesn't really translate well over the podcast. But anyway, if you have not seen Scoop, I highly recommend it. And if you have not seen Prince Andrew Banished, I definitely recommend that. Also, if you have not seen, if you have seen Scoop, let me know what you thought of it. What do you think they did well? What do you think they could have improved on, et cetera? What would you have liked to have seen included? And what are you glad they did include? It is a very well done film. And it's only like 90 minutes, I believe. So it's not a long film at all. I watched it this morning with my little breakfast. So it's not long at all, but it is very good, very enjoyable watch. So that's all I have for you today. I hope you enjoyed today's video or today's podcast episode. Thanks to everybody who has been liking, commenting, sharing. Don't forget, on Monday, April 22nd, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, we have our first live stream it's a live stream. And the link is in the description box below. It's non-visual, but one of the great things is you can listen live and you can comment with other listeners, and you can also call in and I can respond to everything. Podbean really set us up for success with the live stream, so I'm appreciative of that. So I hope to see you there on Monday, April 22nd at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. We have a great episode all set up for you, and I cannot wait for you to listen and to talk to y'all again in real time. I really miss that, so I'm glad we have the ability to do that again. That's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks so much on Patreon for being members, and I will see y'all next time. Bye. Everybody, welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast.